one of the things that happens is the complexities and three dimensionalities of the traditional medicine gets flattened, and you end up having a kind of Xerox copy of this living thing, and it's not as useful. So that's the kind of thought where you just, oh, here's a piece of information, I keep adding it. But we want a three-dimensional, almost like a 3D printer version of knowledge, where you go over and over and over again.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Geological, the podcast that curates East Asian medicine and methods through the power of conversation. It's difficult. No, not difficult. Impossible. Impossible to see at the outset how something might unfold, where over time an idea, a question, or a nudge of inspiration just might take you. It is only in retrospect that I can connect the dots that link together the pivotal moments between hearing the words, the people that would listen to your podcast are not the same as those who would read your website, and episode number 300 of Geological. And here we are, episode 300. It's surprising to me. Surprising in the same way that I look back on 25 plus years of noodling on the question of how does acupuncture work. That question started dogging me after realizing that as much as I hate needles, I loved acupuncture. Well, loved what it did for me. I didn't like the feeling of the needles, but I thoroughly enjoyed how I felt for having had them. It was intriguing. At one point, my curiosity about acupuncture led me to reading about it, and then, well, reading more about it. And the question of how does this work has stuck with me through school, travel, and practice. You're about to enjoy episode 300 of Geological because I'm still powered by the question, how does acupuncture work? I suspect the best inquiries, the most potent questions, lead to more interesting questions. Sure, there are answers found along the way, but answers have a period after them. Questions, well, worthwhile questions, you can make a living from those. When I started the podcast, I always had 4 to 6 questions that I wanted to ask a guest, and I still like to have a few questions as a leaping off point. Sometimes they get asked. Often enough, they don't, because a conversation based on inquiry tends to generate its own momentum. When learning East Asian medicine, we are taught to ask the 10 basic questions, which I can't even remember anymore. It's not that I don't think they're important. I think the idea is to develop a habit of curiosity in our clinical work, to develop an ear for where our patients are certain, and if that certainty is helpful for them or not, to get a feeling not only what a patient's problem is, but the role that it plays in their life, how it might be helpful to them, where they're not paying attention, what experiences have been only half digested or perhaps pushed off into a corner of consciousness that keeps troubles out of the light of awareness. Medicine is a strange business, and I thought by this stage of the game, I'd understand a lot more. I suspect that is in large part what draws me to having these conversations, because as much as I love reading, there is something about dialogue that is deeply enlivening, something about conversation that makes it easier to grasp other ways of thinking. There is something in the back and forth of inquiry, it seems to have a notable effect on perception. And I'm still left with the question that started me off on this career. How does acupuncture work? Yeah, the same question that your new patients ask you, and they're hoping that you'll have a clear, simple, succinct answer. Whatever constant question you have for yourself about this curious medicine we practice, I hope that it is as troublesome, enlivening, and persistent as the one that caught my attention. Because a really good question is like a North Star, and we all need something reliable to steer by. Learning medicine is an iterative process, not at all a simple matter of learning material and applying knowledge. Just like throwing meat and vegetables into a pot of water, Even the most quality raw ingredients, they're useless without being simmered and stewed. In this conversation with Dr. Shouchun Ma and Dan Bensky, we discuss their process and what they've learned in puzzling over the Shanghanlun together for over 25 years. How learning from the classics absolutely requires our experience and attention, and that, unlike our modern world that values Google-like instant understanding, the practice of medicine requires that attentive, slow simmer of repetition and consideration. That's the only way to get a three-dimensional understanding of how things work. We'll get into all that in a moment, but first, a word from the folks that make it possible for you to enjoy Geological. These Geological conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Love the healing power of Moxa, but not the smoke? Lhasa OMS has a bit of magic to share with you. I'm a hands-on guy, but I've found that clinic management is actually best done with software, and Jane makes it super easy to get on board. Do you love learning herbs? Golden Flower Chinese Herbs has a fantastic collection of herbal monographs that will expand your knowledge and your skill. And later in the show, listen for some unique opportunities from Ann Cecil Sturman's Classic Medicine Academy, and the folks at Blue Poppy share their amazing teishin needles and other Japanese acupuncture supplies. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast. In 1989, John Scott and Loretta Monda saw a big problem with the Chinese herbs they had access to, as a significant number of imported herbs were adulterated with undisclosed ingredients. They wanted to provide the safest, most effective Chinese herbal products at a fair price, and that's what started the company. Like you, they care about their patients, and they wanted the best for them. Golden Flower Chinese Herbs has traditional formulas along with novel, modern ones to help you treat your patients and family with effective, potent Chinese herbal medicine in tablet form. Have you seen Golden Flower's excellent monographs? You can find them on their website. Take a deep dive and explore Chinese herbal thought, theory, and practice. Golden Flower is a practitioner-founded and operating company crafting solutions for other practitioners. Visit them online at www.gfcherbs.com and enjoy those monographs. I recently had an amazing experience. Lhasa OMS let me try the revolutionary Premio 10 Moxa device by Sedatelic. For people like me who can't tolerate smoke, it's a game changer in moxotherapy. Crafted with an ergonomic design, the Premio 10 smokelessly generates the heat signature of Moxa. It's not just hot, it's Moxa hot. The patients I've used this with love it. If Moxa smoke is an issue, you'll love this device that supports both stick-like and precise Japanese-style treatments. It's a modern innovation that supports your traditional work. Elevate your practice with the Premio 10. You can get it at lhasaoms.com. And for the next 2 months, get 15% off your entire order using MAX15 at checkout. That's MAX15 at checkout at lhasaoms.com. Offer expires 5/31. Some exclusions apply. I want to take a moment and tell you about Jane, my favorite clinic management software and EMR. Whether you're just starting to do your research or you've been contemplating switching your software for a while now, the Jane team understands that the process can feel intimidating. That's why their goal is to provide you with all the onboarding resources you need to make the switch as smooth as possible. Jane offers a personalized call to set up your account, free data import, and a variety of online resources to get you up and running quickly. And if you need a helping hand along the way, you'll have access to unlimited phone, email, and chat support included in your Jane subscription. Interested in learning more? Book a one-on-one demo at jane.app/switch And if you decide to make the switch, remember to use the code CHEOLOGICAL at signup to receive a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. Welcome to Shop Talk. In this portion of the podcast, we are bringing you roughly 15 minutes of practical clinical methods, perspectives, and advice that has its work boots on. This section is all about practical material that you can begin to investigate the next time that you walk into clinic. Additionally, visit the show notes page for supporting materials from this week's guest on Shop Talk. All right, roll up your sleeves. Let's get to work. Hey friends, welcome to this episode's Shop Talk. Today, Toby Daly is here with me. We're going to be talking about something that I think you're probably going to enjoy. It's a book of all things, and it's a book on something that we love, Chinese medicine, and it's a book about Chinese medicine in plain English. All y'all that know anything about me, I first started podcasting because I wanted to speak to people about the medicine that we practice in plain English. Toby's got a book. We're going to get into this. Toby, what inspired you to do this in the first place?
Hey, Michael. Thanks a lot for having me on Shop Talk. About 18 months ago, I was on a 10-day meditation retreat, and I was a volunteer there. And at the beginning, everyone's introducing themselves, what they do. And this seems to happen, right? There'll be like a group of certain people that do certain things. So this group was a real biotech heavy group. One woman was there. She was able to synthesize like protein molecules digitally and then test them against drugs. And it was just sequencing those all day long. Her husband was on the, I guess there's three supercomputers in the world, maybe quantum or something, I forget, but there's only three in the world. Her husband was the lead researcher for that. Anyways, a whole bunch of biotech people. So this one biotech guy said to me at the very beginning, you know, he said he does biotech, I forget exactly what it was, but he says to me, oh, what do you do? And I said, oh, you know, I practice Chinese medicine. And immediately his arms cross in front of his body, and he kind of pulls back a little bit and gives a little, And I've seen this 1,000 times, Michael. So then slowly over that 10 days, right, there's a lot of talk going back and forth. And at the end of those 10 days, this biotech guy said to me at the end, he says, oh, you know what? If I ever have anything going on with my health, I'm going to really try out Chinese medicine. You know, so thanks a lot for talking to me about that. So something at that moment clicked in my head, and I thought, I better write this down, because I've had that exact conversation hundreds, maybe thousands of times, right? I know Chinese medicine's not part of our culture here in the West, and people just have like a standoffish attitude about it. So this book is basically that conversation I had for those 10 days with that biotech guy. Just giving him some context about Chinese medicine, not really to sell Chinese medicine, just to really inform him about what it's about, what Chinese medicine really is about, and then have people make their own decision.
So context about Chinese medicine, I get that. I often have people come to my clinic. They've already got their own story about Chinese medicine. It's probably a story they talked themselves into so they could screw up the courage to come into an acupuncture clinic. The story often goes, well, it's been around for 2,000 years. It must be okay. Well, okay, that's one story, but I don't know if that's a very helpful story when you come right down to it. So I'm wondering, and this would be something that people would be able to, you know, maybe people like me, like take and use in my clinic. Are there some like screens or lenses that you would use to talk about our medicine in a way that would allow us to tell its story, but make it coherent in everyday language for our patients?
Yeah, I think different patients need different stories, right? So I think, you know, there's the three main avenues I try and explain things to patients. And depending upon their background and my sense about them, it's unusual, I may emphasize only one of those avenues, but usually it's a combination of the three avenues. And then kind of hone that, what I see, what's resonating with them when I talk about it. So, you know, I talk to patients about my clinical experience. Now it's going on a little over 20 years clinical experience. So I talk about, oh, I've had a patient with this and this happened and things like that. So I really, that's one avenue to talking about, a real practical way of talking to them. I say, I've had patients with similar symptoms to yours and they've been able to resolve or something like that. And then other patients really need like a historical context. Like you're saying, those people that come in, they're like, well, it's 2000 years. They've been doing this. It must be something to this, right? So then I try and fill in those people that are already kind of oriented to the historical part. Like, oh, this formula I'm making for you right now, this is from an 1800-year-old text. That this exact formula, you know, people have taken for, you know, millions of times this exact formula, and I'm giving that to you now. That really gives, you know, that gives people a little bit of context for what they're engaging in. And then the third one is there's a lot of patients coming in now that really like to hear, oh, what's the latest research, right? What's, you know, what, how does acupuncture, what's the mechanistic way that acupuncture works from a scientific perspective? So between those three avenues, my clinical experience, historical perspectives, and, you know, the latest scientific research. Different patients need to hear a different combination of those three things, I think.
That's cool. And it's helpful. The reason that I say it's helpful, I mean, especially when I'm trying to do something new in clinic, or especially when I'm thinking about communicating with people, it's really useful to have a couple of screens, a couple of ideas that I can work through. Because otherwise it gets too complicated and there's too much to try to remember. So working through history, science, or your own clinical experience. You know, I think so often about how things get sold just in the advertising world. People try to sell it with research. Well, the latest research shows blah, 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 blah. Or they'll tell you a story. There's your history. Or some kind of testimonial, right? Testimonials are super powerful ways of engaging people. So I'm not talking that we should use these in some kind of smarmy marketing way, but I like the idea of being able to use these three sort of lenses to be able to communicate with. It seems somehow comprehensive. You could tell a lot of different stories in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And then, I feel like I don't have to sell Chinese medicine, right? I'm 100% confident that Chinese medicine can help whatever patient's in front of me. Can I do it, right? That's a little bit of a different thing, but I'm confident Chinese medicine can help with so many different things. So yeah, it's nice to just give that patient that context and then they feel a little bit more comfortable with it. I have a lot of people that come in, not like what you were saying, right? Where they think, oh, a few thousand years ago, this must be something to it. But they come in because their brother or their best friend or their wife or something had got some experience with Chinese medicine, was really positive. And they start out just like that biotech guy with the arms crossed right in front of them. And I just had this again recently, right? Oh, you know, why are you here? What do you, oh, my wife sent me. So they really need a lot of context, right? They're coming in with like zero context. Just the wife said, honey, you got to go. You can't lift that shoulder anymore. You've got to go over there.
Well, too, it seems helpful, especially when working with new people. We're always, at least myself, I'm always looking for, how do I connect with this unique person? Do I need to be kind of kind and gentle to them? Is that what they need? Do they need someone who might actually be a little bit harsh and in their face? Do they need a certain kind of context? So history, science, and experience. Sounds like something useful to try. Okay, so Toby Daly, let me ask you this. You know, we have our own way of talking about our medicine that uses English words, but it's like English words that don't usually go together in the same sentences, let alone next to each other, which is very useful for us, but very confusing for patients. And I don't think it's so helpful to try to give people a Chinese medicine 101 lesson when they're trying just to get healthy and get their well-being back. So I'd love to get your take about how you communicate with people, maybe some very complex ideas, because they asked you, like, well, hey, doc, what do you see with me? How do you talk to them in a way that expresses what you're seeing with our medicine, but in a language that they can understand?
Yeah. First of all, I never talked to him about the six confirmations or the five phases or chi. I feel like that's really off the mark. I use a yin-yang framework, but I never label it yin-yang framework. Everyone can understand this. Your body's too hot. Your body's too cold. Your body's too wet. Your body's too dry. Too much ascending in your body. Too much descending in your body. You have a problem inside your body. You have a problem on the outside of your body. So I always use yin-yang framework for my diagnosis. And then everyone can relate to that concept of like, oh yeah, your body is a little bit too swampy inside. Patients already feel that, and just using that term is really good. Other than by saying like, you've got tai yin dampness. That's helpful for us as clinicians, right? But that's not helpful for the patient. But every patient can understand wet and dry. Wet on the inside of your body or wet on the outside of your body. Heat on the inside, heat above, cold below. All these things that the patient's actually experiencing. I note that and then tell them that that's what we're doing with Chinese medicine. We're correcting that. You've got heat above and cold below. So we're gonna use our modalities to correct that.
So you're basically describing them back to themselves in a very simple language. I mean, almost so simple, it'd be like you're just holding up a mirror and reading the mirror. But you're just doing that. And I love that idea. You use the yin-yang framework without ever even saying yin-yang, even though yin-yang is fairly commonly used in our language these days. Most people would imagine that they think they understand what that is. You just give it a pass. You point at what the expression of yin-yang is without putting the label on it. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I do. Again, different patients will be a little bit different. That's in general. That's where I start. I start with a yin-yang framework, but not labeling anything yin or yang. Everyone can kind of start there. And then sometimes I just stay there with patients. Even if I have to, you know, a long-term chronic patient, I sometimes just stay there with that really simple language. But then, you know, some patients, as we get going further and further, then, you know, more complex things can come along. But yeah, those aren't necessary. And also, it's nice. I don't have to do something extra. I'm already thinking about those yin-yang characteristics. I'm already thinking about those for my diagnosis, for my treatment, things like that. So it's like sharing with the patient. It's not like extra. It's just sharing what I'm already seeing and just verbalizing what I'm already seeing. So that's helpful. And a lot of times too, this can elicit something important in the clinic itself. I'll say, oh, you know, this seems a little bit swampy. You know, inside your body or something like that, or wow, your skin's so dry, and that will elicit something about, oh, you know, it wasn't always dry. 9 months ago when X happened, that's when that came. And then again, that's really helpful. We're speaking a language that the patient can understand, so they're engaging back with us, and then they'll share things that are sometimes, you know, clinically cornerstone ideas for our diagnosis. Sometimes patients will just spontaneously say that once we've, again, like you're saying, we've mirrored back to the patient what we're seeing in really simple language.
So this book that you've written, it is, who's it for? Is it for us practitioners, or is this something you would hand to your patients so that you don't have to repeat yourself?
Yeah, I think it's really written for patients. So I think new practitioners, they might like this because like those three avenues we were talking about before. That's the same framework I use in my when I'm talking to patients. It's the same framework I use for this writing the book, was those three things. And so they might pick up some language that they could use or the latest research about whatever modality they're performing. They may be able to use that, but really it's for patients, right? How I imagine this is patients come in and they have so many questions. You'll answer, of course, a few of them, but if you want to really give them a foundational context of Chinese medicine, what they're actually engaging with, then you could have this book in your office, in your waiting room, or you can tell them to get an ebook or something like that. Eventually this will be on audiobook too. I know a lot of people like that now. So if you have a patient that really would like some more context for what they're doing, that's what this book is for.
All right. Where do they get it?
Where you can get everything in this world, Michael, Amazon.
All right. Big river of books. Toby Daly, thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Ma Lao Shi, Ban Lao Shi, Huan Ying Ni Dao, Chiological. Dr. Ma and Dan Bensky, thank you so much for joining me here on Chiological today for a talk on the Shanghan Lun.
Thanks for having us.
So we're going to do this partly in Chinese, partly in English, because it's just a little bit easier for all three of us to get the material out that way. And Dr. Ma and Dan have a book. By the time you all listen to this, it should be out. It's on none other than the Shanghanlun. And you guys have been working on it for, would it be fair to say, a couple of decades?
More. A little bit more.
Dan, can you give us a little background? I mean, this is a big project, right? Shanghanlun, first of all, not a small thing. This has been a long project. Most books don't take that long.
Well, this book was done on a kind of off-again, on-again matter. And Dr. Ma will correct me if I get anything wrong. But basically, Dr. Ma has been very, very interested from the Shanghanlun since the 60s. He worked with a guy named Shi Jiming, one of a very famous and accomplished doctor in Chongqing in the late 60s. And he and his fellow students of this doctor worked together during the by themselves in the 70s and 80s. And then he has a master's in the Shanghanlun from the Chengdu TCM College in the early 80s. So he's been interested in the Shanghanlun for a long, long time. And actually, my training in Chinese medicine, Macau, had a very cursory introduction to the Shanghanlun. And it wasn't that important part of my background. And I had opportunity to know him in the mid-80s. And in the around the same time, I was working on the translating and editing the formula book and with Andy Gamble and later with Volker Scheide, but that was not much later. And I noticed that, first of all, I noticed from working with Dr. Ma how useful the Shanghanlun was and not only the formulas but the approaches. And then I also noticed doing the formula book that a huge percentage of the formulas in it were either from the Shanghanlun or Jingwei directly or modifications of those formulas. And so in the mid-90s, Dr. Ma, who has his very clear take, both his own and from his different teachers he's had on the Shanghanlun, just thought that we should do something. We had a few detours. One, we took a few years to go to take a PhD in the Shanghanlun from the China Academy of Traditional Chinese Medicine in Beijing. And maybe not for Dr. Ma, but for me, that was exhausting. And so I needed a couple-year break from the project after that. And so then we just kept kind of working on it on and off until today. So that's why it took so long. I think in some ways it wasn't a bad thing. Maybe again, certainly for myself, maybe a little bit for Dr. Ma. You know, we working on something for this length of time, it's like one of the ways that I think Chinese medicine is particularly interesting is that normally, and Dr. Ma and I were just talking about this the other day, is that, way you get better at it is not so much learning new things, which is part of it, but more going over and over the same old things, particularly the classics. And every time you spiral over them, you get more depth to it. And so we spiral over the Shanghanlun quite a few times. And I think we have maybe some more interesting things to say and certainly learned a lot in the process. And then also, I'm just slow. That's the other reason it took so long.
Hi everyone, Anne Cecil Sturman here. I'd like to let you know about the Classical Medicine Academy, a place where students and seasoned practitioners gather to deepen their working knowledge of the complete classical acupuncture and dietary systems. CMA is subscription-based and live online, providing 20 hours per month of question and answer sessions in acupuncture, channel practice, dietary medicine, cultivation and Qigong classes, plus self-paced courses in many subjects, including pulse diagnosis, plus hundreds of hours of archived classes in dietary medicine taught by my husband, Andrew Sturman, plus hundreds of hours of archived classes taught by me, Cody Dodo, and Daniel Post. Join our heart-centered community and bring questions and cases for discussion. You'll be invited to join our private Facebook community group, where over 750 people network to discuss cases and theory with classical practitioners on five continents. Welcome to the Classical Medicine Academy tab on my website, AnnCecilSturman.com. See you there.
Well, some things certainly take time, that's for sure. One of the things, I mean, I've read the beginning of your book, and you talk about this process of going over the material again and again and again. And actually, in reading the book, if you're even just beginning the study of it, like read the formula, and then read about what it does, and then go back and read the formula again. There's a way of iteratively putting this into your system. And this goes so completely counter to our modern day, where there's something new and you got to get the next thing, and the old stuff, well, you pitch that out because the new stuff is where it's at. This is going in the opposite direction that you're talking about. And I think that's a little tricky for us modern people to put our heads around. And yet anyone who has practiced for any length of time will know that we come back again and again to some very basic things. And then we look at them and go, oh my goodness, I didn't see that in that before. And but yet there it is. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and again, Malisha, when we're using Jiang Guo Jiga Shuqing with Tini Jiang, that's what Dr. Ma has this really, really interesting idea that this is particularly true of things that we would call classics in Chinese medicine. And by the classics, he means the works of Zhang Zhongjing and the Neijing. That these particularly, we talked about this a couple of days ago, these particularly reward going over them. As you were just saying, Michael, there's a lot of information, a lot of layers to it. And one of the ways that Dr. Ma and people ask him, you know, why should you study this old book? And he said, you know, all these books, but all of the classics, again, particularly the Zhang Zhongjing classics, they have a Dao, they have a way in them. And the way is about things that don't change. The way of being affected by things from the outside was true in Zhang Zhongjing's time. We've seen that it's true right today with the different infectious and diseases that we have that respond to these kind of formulas. And that'll be true in another 2,000 years. But the actual details of how you work with it and how you approach it, how you make up the herbs, or even maybe what herbs you use. That's called the shu, the art, the mechanics maybe would be the better translation, that the Dao stays the same, but the shu can change. And we can adapt things, we can have our own ideas, we can do different kinds of things. And again, Dr. Ma gave the example in our talk about the Neijing, that it's about the Dao of how the channels work and how the body works. That hasn't changed, but probably in Neijing times, they were using either bones or pieces of sharp stones, and now we use stainless steel needles. The shu has changed, and maybe even the way we do things and approach. I'm sure that most modern patients, no matter where they were, wouldn't appreciate Han Dynasty treatments, but that's just the shu, that's the mechanics, the details. But the Dao of how you approach the body, that doesn't change. And I think I'm speaking for Dr. Ma, that this is particularly true, and this is one of the reasons why anybody who does any kind of Chinese East Asian medicine they need to read these classics because the background, the Tao, the that doesn't change. And that's why you go over it over and over again. And you know, you can do electroacupuncture, you can use granules, you can do whatever you want. That's the shoe. But the core of the medicine is in these books.
Yeah, it's good. We have this book because I have Dr. Dan Bensky. So then I get this book because we're together discussing more than 20 years. But if every time Dr. Dan Bensky say, oh, we need to together to discussion, to work combined now. So, and the most of the work Dr. Dan Bensky did. So I think this is the book is writer is Dr. Dan Bensky. That's true. So I think I understand that the Sun Han Lun, I think it's their traditional Chinese think the way or canonic both from the Sun Han Lun. That's the first book. And the book not just for the right now, before, even for in the future. Yeah, Dr. Damsky just talk about Tao and the Su. So I agree with that.
So I'm thinking about what you guys are talking about with the Tao, the way, the fundamental thing that doesn't really change. Could I say that? Does that sound reasonable?
I think the fundamental principles don't really change.
Fundamental principle doesn't change. And yet the Shu, the mechanism, the way we implement that, well, that's very mutable.
Absolutely.
Very changeable, like you were saying. Stone needles at one point, these really nice, single-use disposable stainless steel in our moment. And in listening to you guys talk about how we have to go over the material again and again, partly because we need to bring our experience to it to be able to see what it has in it. And I'm thinking about the Nei Jing, and that's a discussion between Huang Di and Qi Bo. And I'm thinking about you guys working on this book. It's called a discussion, of cold damage, right? The book is a discussion. You guys have been discussing it for over 25 years. Any practitioner who comes to this is discussing it with their experience.
And their patients.
And their that's why we're all here, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the things that Dr. Ma is very clear on, and I agree with him, is that this book is not a treatise. It is like a bedside discussion between a teacher or a practitioner and his students. Do this. When you see this, do that. When you see that, do this. It's not a kind of, someone didn't sit down and drink tea or whatever and write this thing. This is a clinical encounters that are kind of recorded a long time ago and have been the basis of clinical encounters by tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, over the last, 1,800 years. So it is a discussion. It is a way of communicating, thinking about how to deal with people in the clinic. And that's kind of, I think we called it with commentaries for the clinic, because to us, everything is, nothing's 100%. But for us, this is a very clinically relevant book. And again, I think maybe getting back to what I was translating for Dr. Ma before, going over it, you get the Tao of even something with, what's the Tao of Zhongfeng, or Tao of, wind strike in the Shang Han Lun. If you read it over and over again, combined, like you were saying, Michael, with your experience, with your patients, and each one illuminates the other, over time, you get somewhere.
It takes time. It takes some patience.
It takes time, yeah.
This I suspect is, I know for me, I think about going to Chinese medicine school, I had no idea the amount of time that would be required. For you laugh, and I'm kind of grateful too in a way, because had I known at the beginning what it was going to take, I probably wouldn't have had the fortitude or the courage to step onto the path and see where it took me. So I would say the juice has been worth the squeeze, but it takes a lot longer. And, you know, there's that phrase, and we have this in English, that the more you know, the less you understand, or the more you understand, the less you know, something like that. And it's really, really true. It sounds good as a phrase. The problem is it feels like failure in the moment. Like, oh God, this again, I still don't get it. But in a way, that's not the bad news. That's the good news. It's like, I've got an opportunity to learn something new here.
Exactly. Yeah, I think, it's one of those things, again, this is when you use a book like this or contents of a book like this, it's not really, it's about you trying to use it to help someone. And if you use it when you get out of school and you study a little Shang Han Lun and you use Guizhi Tang on someone, and if like 5 years later you're using the formula the same way, something is seriously wrong with your practice. It should be, again, just think about when you see patients over and over. You're seeing people over and over again. You have to get more understanding of what's going on. If you look at Chinese is a textual tradition medicine, and you look at the text and you look at your patients and you look at yourself, that's how you get experience. But if you don't have some kind of, and I think this is one of the issues with Chinese medicine everywhere, that this Tao that Dr. Ma was talking about is not really congruent with biomedicine. And so you have to think differently. And I think in our day and age, you have to be able to think both ways. You can't just pretend you live in the Han Dynasty because none of your patients live in the Han Dynasty. And if they have to go to the ER, they're not wearing robes in the ER and things like that. So we have to be able to think multiple ways. I think that's the big, that's the main attraction, and also maybe the main issue with doing East Asian medicine at the present time. You have to think multiple ways. And if you get locked into one way, it just doesn't work very well. And I think, personally, if you look in the Shang Han Lun, even though we talk about a Tao, it's not a single Tao. There's multiple ways of looking at things in the Shang Han Lun, much less, the companion text in modern, last 1,000 years, the Jingwei. So it's not an ideology. It's a Tao, and that's not the same thing at all.
We like to use that phrase, the Tao, right? And we think about the Tao Te Ching and the Tao of this, the Tao of that. It's important to us. I know for myself, this is something I've had to kind of beat it out of me in a way. This idea of, look, this medicine's been around for a really, really long time. And because it's been around and because it's ancient, well, there must be something really important here. And I think that's true, there is. But there's like a funny mental habit that I've had. And my patients don't help because they come in and they say things like, well, this acupuncture must be good because it's been around for, thousands of years. Leaning on history like that, I have found to not be helpful. Just because something's been around and it's been helpful to others through those years doesn't mean that I necessarily know how to make it helpful in this moment. And it's easy to kind of like ride on the coattails of people who have come before and imagine that we can even think and be like they are. But I found that doesn't work so well. Like you're saying, we live in this modern moment. We have to understand this Han medicine side by side with biomedicine. There's no other generation or generations, let's say the past 100 years of human beings on the planet that have had to deal with that situation.
Well, I mean, biomedicine is different now than 100 years ago also. So all these things are moving targets.
Yes, there's that. So I'd like to get your thoughts more on approaching this Tao of medicine, and how do I say this? Like engaging it without ideology and engaging it without, I'm going to use the word fantasy.
Thank you. I can think about right now, the people learn the traditional Chinese medicine. I think mostly they have the two way for right now. One way, 专病专方, or we say,
how yeah, they say use a certain formula for a certain disease.
Yeah, that is one way. So, for example, we say 麻黄汤 for we 太阳伤寒, that is 太阳伤寒, we just use 麻黄汤. And the other problems I have the just one formula for some disease. Recently, people is like to that because will be save the time and easy to use it. Yeah, for example, if they have the pneumonia, we say the formula, Ma Xin Shi Gan Tang. So one formula on the one disease. So this is one way. Mostly, right, I think right now, mostly people like that way because it's clear and easy to understand, to use. Other way is take some more time to understand the San Han Lun. Sometimes maybe practice and learned, you have to spend 3-5 years, then can more deeply to understand the San Han Lun. The way, because people sometimes, if we don't know this formula for this disease, we cannot do it. For example, if the patient come talk about
gastroparesis, yes.
Yeah, gastroparesis. And also I have the reflux. I have a pioneer. So they give you more the information combined. And they say, oh, always feels for this burping every day after eat years. So like these problems, if we kind of say one formula for the reflux, one for pineal, or other one for the stomach, we cannot do that. For traditional Chinese medicine, we need to know, oh, this is xinxiapi. And the hot and the cold combined.
Yeah, upper gastric focal distension.
Yeah, they have the hot, cold combined. So, well, oh, this is Banxia Xiexin Tang. So this way must be from the traditional Chinese medicine. We cannot think about it from the right or the Western, the diagnosis. So there are some different way. One is the way is easier. One, but not enough. Other way takes a long time. It's hard for the everyone. So I think mostly these two ways is important because we need to complement each other, Western doctor and the traditional Chinese medicine. But it's a different theory. It's harder to combine.
I think we all really love it when a patient comes in and they've got something and we look at it and go, I know what to do with that. Like your example, Dr. Ma, someone comes in with pneumonia, Ma Xing Shi Gan Tang, like, great, we're good, done. And then there's other people, they've got gastroparesis, they've got reflux, there's some problem with their pylorus, there's, you know, they've got all this digestive stuff. You could look at it as three different things, but that doesn't work. What works is, what is this pattern? How does this thing hold itself together? What's going on here? Not so much with Western biophysiology, although we can't forget it, but we have to look at it in terms of hot, cold, up, down, very basic traditional ways of looking at the human being and traditional ways of looking at human physiology. And when we look through that lens, it's like, oh, Banxia Xiexin Tang, right? You got this knotting of cold and heat. It's in the epigastrium, And there you go. Fantastic formula. And really, this illustrates that we can think kind of biomedically and sometimes get results. But if we can think more in terms of the Tao, as you've been talking about it, how things are and how they unfold, it gives us a whole different perspective. Do I have that right?
I mean, I don't know, but we agree with you. So I think, you know, maybe another way of putting it, and maybe I use a slightly different metaphor than Dr. Ma, but I think there is a momentum in this kind of, you know, combining the TCM, or East Asian medicine, and Western medicine. One of the things that happens is the complexities and three-dimensionalities of the traditional medicine gets flattened. And you end up having a kind of Xerox copy of this living thing. And it's not as useful. And you don't, again, so that's the kind of thought where you just, oh, here's a piece of information, I keep adding it. But we want a three-dimensional, almost like a 3D printer version of knowledge, where you go over and over and over again, and you end up with a three-dimensional, maybe a terrible analogy, but anyway, I think this way of thinking, oh, you know, pneumonia, mashing, shugantang, that's an incredible flattening of not only of the medicine, but of the, again, we keep getting back to the same thing, of the patients. And, you know, maybe in terms of Shanghanlin type stuff, when COVID first started, there was a big rush to say, oh, COVID equals this one thing in Chinese medicine. So this is like, you know, on a certain level, it was a possibility, you know, certain kinds of epidemics are one thing that could happen, but there was a rush to do that before anybody had any idea, enough experience to see, is that true or not? And I think in COVID, it turned out to not be true. There's different kinds of people developed with COVID. There may have been at certain stages of the epidemic, certain commonalities. You know, we all have our different ideas of what they were, but it definitely wasn't like, oh, you have COVID, you take this formula. That just was, I think, clinically ridiculous. It just didn't work. And there was this way of trying to flatten things. And again, I think, you know, one of the reasons that we spent so much time on this project, and again, other people have done other books and other people have done this book quite well, actually, but we wanted to do our contribution to resist this flattening. If you look at the Shanghanlun through, you know, Dr. Ma's eyes, as we've done in this book, it's not a straight algorithm, you know, like, oh, boom, 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 boom. There's all these different nuances. There's all these different things you have to take into attention. It's at least three-dimensional. Sometimes I think Dr. Ma works in higher, more than three dimensions when he does the medicine. But it's against this, you know, it shows that, oh, don't flatten it. You should appreciate it for what it is.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And that metaphor really lands for me. Because when I think about taking and making a Xerox copy of something, especially if it has dimension in, not only do you get the flattening that you talked about, but then when you Xerox a Xerox, now you're beginning to even lose more information. It's not just a flattening. You lose the resolution.
Exactly.
You fail to see the dimensionality. That makes a huge amount of sense. I can remember being so frustrated in Chinese medicine school when we were studying herbs, because I was looking for this formula to treat this thing. And then you get into this nuance of, well, okay, so you've got this pathogen and it hits a person like this. Maybe they're qi deficient and they've got some dampness. That person is going to respond differently to that pathogen than someone who is yin deficient and hot. So we have to consider these contexts. There's pathogen, there's person. I mean, this to me is one of the beauties of Chinese herbal medicine in particular and East Asian medical thought in general, that everything only makes sense in relation to something else. You can't stand outside of it. You can only understand it from within. And the beauty is, it's always different. The trouble is, it's always different. It's a very, I was going to say troublesome, but troublesome isn't quite the right word. It's impossible to not be engaged as you do this.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Dr. Ma, we mentioned lots of times in the Shanghan Lun, the different formulas are for people with different constitutions. And, you know, they're not necessarily different pathogens, and certainly not in the biomedical sense, and maybe not even in a traditional East Asian sense. But it's the certain thing hits a certain person at a certain time in a certain environment, then the disease manifests in a certain way, and more importantly, needs to be treated in a certain way. And I think, again, this time about the flattening, one of the things that we did in this book, which I think for some readers is going to be problematic, is that, you know, Dr. Ma and, to a lesser degree, myself, we selected commentaries, parts of commentaries for the different, we call them paragraphs, other people call them lines. And we decided, in general, we just translate these selections of the commentaries. We didn't digest them. We didn't, you know, oh, this guy, sometimes, but we let this, they're all guys, I'm afraid, as far as I know. We let them say their thing. Sometimes the way they say it is hard for us people to understand. And sometimes they say things that are maybe we disagree with. But instead of saying like a digest, oh, this guy said this, it's like, okay, this guy said this, and then you have a paragraph or two of what they say. And if you would just read through this book, you're going to go, oh, that I don't understand that. That's a waste of time. But if you go back to what they say, and you go back to the Yuanwen, the text of the Shanghan Lun itself, and then to Dr. Ma's discussion, and then to your patients. Again, this gives you, over time, this, as Dr. Ma was saying, takes time. This gives you a more three-dimensional approach to trying to get your own understanding of that, what that particular paragraph means. So if you just want to go home for the weekend and read the Shanghan Lun, you know, that's not the way you would use our book. But if you want to get into this depth, again, you have to be, as you were talking about earlier, Michael, you have to be okay, like, huh? What's that about? Because, again, if you read something like this, and, you know, if it was super clear and everybody understood it like a ideological text, they wouldn't have these hundreds of people commenting on it over the last 1,000 years. And that's, again, to me, that's a feature. That's not a bug. It means that you can use it and understand it in different ways. And maybe even I myself will use these ideas in the different ways in different patients. It's not this kind of Ten Commandments or anything like that. It's not a revelation. It's a way that people have been using to try and figure stuff out. And so, again, I think the way Dr. Ma and I designed it is, you know, if you want to take the time to read these things and be okay with, like, first few times through, it'll be like, what? Then you'll get another level of, again, not another level of consciousness raising, but another level of clinical utility out of understanding, out of the text.
Well, it might change your consciousness a bit.
It might. It might drive you to imbibe some liquids that change your consciousness in a different way. That's also possible.
Well, I appreciate your comment here about it's not the Ten Commandments, because so often, and look, we want to get it right in clinic. Of course we do. But it seems in our profession there is a habit of, oh man, I have to get this right, because, you know, these other idiot doctors that they saw before me, you know, they got it wrong, and it's like up to me to fix it, and I have to get it right. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do our best for our patients. Of course we should. But man, trying to get it right is, I mean, that's a Herculean, impossible task in some ways, especially when getting it right means you might have to completely change your thinking to see what something is. Dr. Ma brought up the great example of gastroparesis with reflux and other things. If you're looking at something and you think it's three different things, but it's actually one thing, you really do have to change your thinking. And I don't know any of us that are particularly happy to have to change our thinking. I wonder if you have any advice about that, besides like reading the book and being okay with, huh? Because it's not a bug, that's actually a feature.
Malasha, yeah, Jackson.
Yeah, because we are discussing each other, I learned lots of from Dr. Dan Bensky, because he's serious, everything. For example, we say, we get the case, Ding An.
Yeah, case histories.
Sometimes we ask some specialist from Chinese, give me the good, the Ding An. But mostly Dr. Dan Bensky, no, don't use this one. Because if the one formula and three more herbs, not really this formula. So we need to if you say Guizi Tang, I say focus on with Guizi Tang. If and the other more three, four herbs, that is not Guizi Tang. So this case is Dr. Dan Bensky always don't use it. So we're serious with that. And something even deep area who he still found it. For example, he said that the Tiao Wei Chen Qi Tang, oh, they show twice from the San Han Dun. I said, why? Just once, not twice. I check all the books, just one. Then I check the Song Dynasty, this Song Ben San Han Dun. Yes, they show twice. And some different, he found some different, just one area different to Tiao Wei Chen Qi Tang. One is the Da Huang with skin, other without. Then Dr. Dan Bensky asked why. Same formula, why is with Da Huang with skin, other without. We need to think about, look other area combined to talk about, oh, we know. Because with skin, Da Huang, the perching is stronger. Without is lighter. So like this area, we still, Dr. Dan Bensky still found only, in general speaking, book don't pay attention with that. And he found it, he wanted we talk about each other. Why? Get the result. And also with the line word, because we just need to deeply understand this line, then we talk about easily to people to understand. Because before we look at all the different opinion, then for we are discussing, we have the word different opinion. So this is still sometimes important. For example, like the Taiyang Bin, they have the one symptoms like the nausea. But most of the book say nausea because the cold damages the stomach. But we are thinking about, they have the different way. One is if damage the stomach, why use Ma Huang Tang, use Guizi Tang, don't use herbs for the stomach. They don't use herbs for stomach. And with the other line, say, if purging, if Guizi Tang patient, if you use purging, if the qi still up, then you can use Guizi Tang again. So we say, oh, we get, because the nausea just show the mechanism is still, the inside still want to go into the outside. So you still can use Guizi Tang, because the pathogen still want to go outside. That means nausea want to go outside. So we have a different discussion, so get a different opinion. Also, we get other doctors opinion there. Also, we have the how we are understanding. So the lines. So that's even some special area we still bank and for a few times. So Dr. Dan Bensky said one is good. He said right now we are back. Look at this book. Someone from 20 years ago. Right now we look still fine. So that's more important, because this 20 years, we are improvement from the kinetic or from the ready or discussion. But we look back some way with the need to change it. But mostly we are discussion, Dr. Damis here, or we are back and look still fine. So that I think is more important.
Yeah, I think that also gets back to what you were talking about in terms of, again, one of the other maybe slightly unusual or different things in our book is what Dr. Ma was talking about was the cases. We have a lot of cases in the book, I think like 125 or something like that. And they go back from the 11th century to Dr. Ma's cases from a few years ago. And again, one of the things we did on purpose, though, again, maybe is that we identify who where we got them from, etc. But in the case itself, we don't say, oh, you know, in 1108, this person did this. The cases are all the same because I think while the shu changes, the Dao doesn't change in these cases. And it was quite difficult to find cases for our criteria, which were, one thing was like, oh, if we're going to talk about what this formula does, we need to just use the formula. You know, if you have, I guess Dr. Ma said, you have Guizhitang, which has like 6 ingredients, and the formula used has 15 ingredients, then
it's not
Guizhitang. And the other thing is we try to find cases that weren't like, oh, these are cool uses of these formulas. That's a different kind of book, and that's a really important book to have. But our book is like, here's how these cases reflect on the text of the Shanghan Lun. The case shows you something about the text, or it's a case where someone used the text. They use, I understand this paragraph of the Shanghan Lun in this way, and that's why I use this formula on this person. Now, to be honest, in terms of the lack of modification, if we had more real access, not access, but we felt more comfortable accessing Japanese and through the Greek Korean sources, we could have had a lot more cases because their traditions of the Shanghan Lun are more likely to use them, the formulas, with no or very slight changes. And certainly at least the last few hundred years in China, that's not so much the case. Of course, there's a reaction against that now. The other thing is, as you were saying, Michael, you know, it's really hard to find a case that talks about someone with a simple wind strike, a simple zhongfeng, who gets better with Guizhitang in one visit, because no one would write that case. The cases traditionally were written to show off. To show off like, oh, those other idiots, they did this, but I understood, because I understood the Shanghan Lun, I did that and it cured them. Sometimes, very rarely, but my favorite cases are some other idiot, meaning me, in the past, I did this, and then because I didn't understand things, and now I understand things better, I do that. So something that people will consider a commonplace case, no one would write that down? The cases weren't done as a study. They were done as a kind of publicity or some promotion. And so that made cases for formulas that work very well, but for things that people use them for all the time, a little bit harder to find. But I think the cases also, I mean, I'm not sure how successful we were all the time, but again, using the cases to reflect back on the text and how you might use the formula yourself, I think really does add another dimension to understanding. And again, the text is alive. It was alive in the Han Dynasty. It was alive in the Song Dynasty. It's alive now. And so hopefully the cases we use kind of both show the thinking process sometimes, which sometimes is multi-stepped. And it's like, oh, I understand this principle from this line, this paragraph of the Shanghan Lun, and then I interpret that principle in this other way, and then I get to this formula. Or sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, no, this person, this seemingly strange presentation, oh, that's like this paragraph in the Shanghan Lun. So there's no, it's more of a recognition of a match, of a pattern, than any kind of complicated thinking process. So both of those things happen when you use the Shanghanlun, and of course the other books too.
The Teixin is a gentle and effective tool for treating patients without inserting acupuncture needles. Using a Teixin causes no pain or discomfort, allowing practitioners to treat even the most sensitive of people. Using the Teixin invites practitioners to evolve senses and dormant capacities. Humans are capable of great subtlety, far greater than we often believe. Working with the Teixin compels us to confront many of our assumptions about what makes acupuncture effective. This exciting journey of self-discovery helps practitioners to refocus how they practice acupuncture. If you'd like to dig in deeper, check out episode 303, where I talk about all things Teixin with Dr. Bob Quinn. Blue Poppy carries a series of handcrafted Teixins created by a silversmith cooperative in San Pancho, Mexico. They also offer many videos on their YouTube channel, which provides basic instruction on how to use a Teixin and other non-insertive tools that they carry. Dr. Bob Quinn's best-selling book on how to effectively use the Teixin is also available. Visit www.bluepoppy.com for Teixins and other fine Japanese acupuncture tools. I appreciate your thought about the very common use of a formula that, you know, even at a fairly beginning level, you would get it, you would see it, you could use it well and help people. That wouldn't get written down. Why would that get written down? It's boring. It doesn't look so good on your Instagram feed.
That's the Instagram, yeah.
You know, I mean, Volker Scheid did, you know, and you guys published this with Eastland Press, the book on the Mungho doctors. And that's it's a fantastic book that talks about like the social capital people have and the kind of cliques and, you know, who's in, who's out, who knows stuff, who doesn't know stuff, and how they kind of show off to get patients. Not different than us.
Well, also, I mean, they did have even a stronger, particularly last few hundred years. I'm dating myself, but they used to have rich families would have what I call doctor slams instead of poetry slams. So they would have their patient in their house and they would invite, you know, four or five different doctors from the area to come see the guy. And the doctors would have to convince the family would choose which doctor they would use. And so the doctor had to present themselves well. And some of our cases are from these doctors. I don't think I used the term in the book, but from these doctor slams. Because if you want to get, and again, having these high prestige patients was good for you in many, many different ways. But you couldn't, you know, because of the integration of Chinese medical ideas into the society, it wouldn't be like, oh, you know, they wouldn't look on whatever, Facebook, who's the number, or Yelp, who's the best doctor in Hangzhou, they would invite them over. The doctors would have to convince the family, I'm the best person for your father or whoever your family member is. And you can see in some of the cases, they're saying, oh yeah, all the masses, all the groups of people, they said this. They thought this was something that needed cooling, but I can show them, based on the Shanghanlun, that this person actually needed warming. And it's a performance aspect. And they would write those down when they won the poetry, the doctor slam, and things worked. So there's a performance aspect to cases, and that's just, you know, that's just the way it is.
All right, so we need to keep this in mind as we're reading through the commentaries of this book.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think I mentioned this to a degree in the introduction, maybe not in such a colloquial detail. And I think one thing I want to emphasize, to me, one of the very special things about this book is that we show things like, this is what this person said, this is what this person said. But Dr. Ma has an unbelievably unique background in studying and using this text. So he started as an apprentice, and then he during the Cultural Revolution, And then when things opened up for academics afterwards, he had a background as a math teacher professionally, but he had worked with the Shi Jiming very long. So when the Chengdu TCM school opened up its master's program at the end of the 70s, remember at that time, Sichuan had about 50 million people. That's the population of Sichuan. They had like one opening for someone who didn't have a bachelor's in Chinese medicine in their master's program and in the Shanghanlun, and they selected Dr. Ma. And so he had that kind of academic training with some amazing practitioners and scholars of Chinese medicine in Chengdu, late 70s, early 80s. He worked in a very, very busy clinic that had an inpatient facility in Chongqing for a few years. And then he's been here for 35 years, approximately. Is that right, Malisha? Yeah. So he has apprentice training. He and his family, his daughter, and some other people just put out a book of his own teacher's kind of private, ancient version of the Shanghanlun. This came out from a prestigious publishing company in Beijing a few months ago. So he has that kind of connection to a real tradition with a real, lineage type thing, whatever that means, but it means something. He has the kind of modern Chinese academic. He's worked in very busy clinics, including inpatient things in China, and he's worked on Westerners for decades. So there's nobody like this, that I'm pretty sure, actually, nobody. And so, part of, besides having his insights into what the text means and his selection for, by and large, what the commentaries are, he has his own, he adds his commentary, right? His tradition is living. So we not only study what the traditional people said, we put our own stuff in. And Dr. Ma's insights are really quite valuable. And particularly, I would say, to me personally, he has figured some things out about the Jueyin that are really stunningly useful, as well as, I think, quite explanatory. And so it's one of these things where it's like part of a tradition, but at the same time, it has a big dose of seasoning from an individual's perspective who really knows his stuff. I think that's really what makes this book, I think, worth, for me, that's what made the book worth doing, to share this kind of background and understanding. And almost on a certain level, he's a kind of exemplar of what it means to, and again, I think one of the other things about Dr. Ma that's really important, he is not an ideologue. If you asked him, is he a Jingfang practitioner, he would say no. He likes to use them, he uses them a lot, but it doesn't, if he has patients that they don't fit, then he uses something else. And I think also maybe unusual among Shanghanlun texts, lots of times we'll say, okay, this situation, and Zhang Zhongjing didn't give a formula, but I think this Wenbing formula works really well for that situation. And so he's really focused on the understanding the text and the clinical utility of the text, and not, bogged down in some kind of, intramural or internecine thing about, you don't use Sang Ye because that's not in the Shanghanlun. Like, that's a, that to me is a kind of self-defeating ideology. And so he has this very strong, his main teacher had his own version, his own ancient version of the text. They did a fabulous book in Chinese on this. And then he's like hanging out in Seattle. So that's really quite...
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me, exactly. And again, hopefully I'm sharing the luck by helping him get this book out in English.
I'm certainly looking forward to reading it. Can you give us, you just mentioned the Jueyin, which is confusing to lots of people. Could you give us a quick example of Dr. Ma's perspective on this?
Malisha, you trying to get Jueyin?
Yeah, we are... First of all, we think about with Dr. Dan Bezke, where with the Samsung service also is very open. For the cases, first time we are thinking about one formula for the, what kind of disease. For example, Martin's Guidon come for the common pneumonia, come for the SARS, come for the COVID-19. No, don't do that. We need to give the empty area. So every rider, every practitioner, they can develop, not just for this or the disease then. So we need to give them more empty area. They can develop, can think about it by themselves. Not just we are say, what you can follow me. Not necessary. And also, Juyin disease, we are discussing have some different way. Because always Juyin Bin from the book talk about the from the upper body is hot, lower body is cold. Talk about the Juyin Bin. But also, Juyin Bin is cold disease. But the doctor Lu Yuanlei asked, I understand like the Tai Yin is like the stomach spleen, the cold. Juyin, like Shao Yin, like the cold from the kidney. But I don't know why, where from the cold from the Juyin. So we'll talk about, think about it, because Juyin, the cold, not from the passenger's cold, not from the body's cold, from stagnation. If something stagnation, yang qi cannot move in, so that's cause cold. First time stagnation may have some heat. If stagnation for a while, then if stagnation is too strong, the yang energy cannot circulation, so sudden is cold. So Juyin Bin is sometimes serious and suddenly. Because from the Bingji mechanism, we understand that is more problems from the just one suddenly stop it, cannot open. So that we think about that is mostly from the Juyin Bin. If we can find this way, maybe you can understand more with the Juyin Bin. So this one we talk and think for still for many times. Then we think about, yes, this is Bingji from the Juyin Bin. So this is mostly different with upper body hot, lower body cold. Or like the Duan say, where is the cold from the Juyin? We talk about Juyin because from the stagnation or obstruction.
So you know, Lu Yuanlei was a very, very influential doctor in the 20s, 1920s, so in the Republican period. I mean, my only comment on this is, the indexer that we use for this book and some of our other books is herself a practitioner. And she told us after indexing the book that she understood Wu Zhu Yutang much, much better than she had understood it before and had a chance to use it on a patient, a longtime patient that she had not been helping very much before. And after reading what Dr. Ma wrote about the Juyin Bin, she go, oh, this person needs Wu Zhu Yutang. And the formula was super effective for her own patient. So she had a side benefit of doing the indexing on Dr. Ma's commentary by helping one of her patients. Yeah, so I think, you know, I mean, everybody has their own take on stuff, but I think Dr. Ma's stuff is, in some of his cases, he has one thing that's unique about the book is, I don't know how many, 10, 20 of the cases are Dr. Ma's own cases. And they're really quite, they're illuminating. You know, I think, you know, astounding cases are not that useful for people because it's like, wow, I would never do that. But I think with Dr. Ma's cases, it's like, oh, that I would never have thought of that. But in the future, I will be able to think of that because I've read, you know, the text and his cases. So I think they're quite, I found them very fun to work on, but also quite illuminating. So I think those are the main things that are maybe special about our particular translation.
You know, I can remember being in school or just going to classes and hearing a Dr. Slam type explanation and going, wow, that's just so cool, but useless to me. Like, how would I ever come up with that? And so something that is tangible, let's just say within my grasp of understanding, that's really helpful. And I love the story of the indexer who, because she's doing the process that we talked about at the very beginning of this conversation, going over the text, going over the material, looking at it again, just parsing through it, through the job of doing indexing, it's like, oh, I see that now. That's instructive and that's helpful. And I think it's a great reminder that we don't get this stuff like straight out of the box. It's like
some assembly required.
Some assembly required. Thank you.
And I think it gets back to what you were saying. And, you know, I'm a modern day American. I'm just like everybody else. But you know, you just learn that you have to go over it. You know, it's not. You can't expect. It's not. You can't. It's not a. You know, the Shanghan Lun is not a set of tweets. You have to go over it. And even if, I think not only when you think you, when it's like, huh, you have to go over it, but when you think you really understand it well, you need to go over it even more because probably you've missed something and you just haven't seen that you've missed it. Anyway, that's why we did the book. Hopefully it turns out that way for people.
Well, and even when we know it really well, there's always a little more.
Exactly. There's always a little more.
You know, and I know for myself, the thing of, I think I understand this, I am asking for trouble.
Yeah.
So there's that. Well, you guys, thanks so much for today's conversation, for one. Always fun for this contribution to our field. Not a small thing. And especially because we're talking both about the Tao and the Shu of the work that we do. You can't have one without the other.
Right.
I think that's really important to keep in mind.
So, yeah, I think it's very important. And no matter what you do, whether even acupuncture or herbs or whatever, you need to keep thinking about this. That I can't remember. It's a phrase that also from the 20s style, but Volcker is a big fan of it. And I'm blanking on the Chinese, I'm afraid. But you want to respect the old, but not get stuck in the old. You know, you have to respect what's come before us, but you have to also, and I think on a certain level, you have to have a critical approach, but you have to have the ziga, you have to have the stuff to be critical. And that means you can't just read it once and go, well, that's nonsense. You have to read it many, many times and try to use it. And then, you know, maybe after doing it for 50 times, 100 times, you can say, oh, I think that aspect of it doesn't quite match my experience. So I think it's not a question of believing anything, but it's a question of respecting it and taking the time to understand it. And then, and only then, do you have the ability to be critical of it.
Well, that is certainly helpful advice for this moment in time we live in anyway.
Yeah.
So that's useful. All right, you guys, thank you so much. And when will this book be out? Do you have a sense?
It's at the printer now. And so this is the early February we're doing this. I think it should be out in April. The vagaries of printing these days makes anything more precise. You know, it's one of those things. Sometimes in Chinese medicine, precision and accuracy go against either too precise, you're not going to be accurate. So if I gave a date, I would be inaccurate. But it should be out in April sometime.
I look forward to reading it again and again.
Well, yeah, I've read it many times myself.
Wonderful. Dr. Ma, any... Hayo shoma yao shuo ma?
No, thanks, Michael. Thanks very much. Thanks for giving you a chance to talk about the Shanghan. Thank you. Dr. Dambinsky.
All right, you guys. Until next time, then.
Okay, take care. Bao Zhong.
Yeah, take care. You are.
I met Dr. Ma in my first week of Chinese medicine school. He was one of the herb teachers. And what I most remember from those very, very early days was just how impossible it all seemed. Because unlike linear Western thinking, where you can stand outside of a system and observe it, with Chinese medicine, there is no outside to stand on. It, in a way, rhymes with quantum physics. The observer is part of the system, not apart from the system. I damn near gave up in those early days, and if it wasn't for a wisecracking classmate, oddly enough, also from Missouri, I don't think I would have made it through that first semester. He pulled out a little yellow post-it note, you know, the really tiny ones, and in blue ink wrote on it, "Things take time." He pasted it on the Materia Medica that was the source of my ranting and somehow calmed the turmoil of the moment. I took that little post-it note and taped it to the wall of my study, and those three words, "things take time," it helped me to get through those 3 years of schooling. And what's more, it still does. Hearing Dan talk about how we have to return again and again to the material, even if we don't understand it, but to reliably show up, bring our understanding, confusion, and experience, and give yourself to the learning without the expectation of immediate results, I found that to be worthwhile. This translation my teachers have worked on for 25 years, it's not just a translation of words. It's an invitation to consider the experience of doctors over the centuries, including two from our modern day, who have generously simmered their discussions and inquiry into a book that is one of the cornerstones of our medicine. Things take time. Yes, they most certainly do. Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.